And Nick Cave.
William Gill.
Thanks so much for talking to me about your very exciting project, Heard New York, which is going to be an installation and exhibition in Grand Central Station's Vanderbilt Hall for its 100th anniversary. I've read a lot about the work you do, Nick, so I'd really just like to start by asking you to tell me what a sound suit is.
A sound suit is a wearable sort of garment that really becomes a second skin. That and looking at the body as an apparatus. So it's brought to the body, and it's made out of materials such as twigs, bottle caps, buttons, a very sort of broad range of materials. But it's a sound suit because through physical motion, it then generates sound through movement.
How did you come upon this concept?
You know, this concept came about in 1992 in response to the Rodney King L.A. riot incident. You know, it was so profound, that whole incident, and just reading about how they were bringing description to his character, you know, working out with prison weights, larger than life, scary, took 10 men to bring him down. I was just visually thinking, what does that look like? And so I then also started to think about, what does it feel like to be sort of dismissed, discarded, viewed less than, which then led me into thinking about materials that perhaps provoked that kind of response. And so I was in the park and sitting on a bench and looked down, and there was a twig. My first sound suit was made out of all twigs. And then once I made this, what I thought I was making was a sculpture, but then I realized I could physically put it on. And then putting it on, I started to move, and then that generated sounds from the twigs clinging up against themselves. And then it made me think about, was I building a suit of armor, something to protect myself as a African-American male, and looking at the role of racial profiling. And so it just really started to unfold into this larger sort of way of thinking.
One thing that people have often said about the work is that they evoke ritual connotations, mm-hmm. that they look like African masks, but there's also a hint of more contemporary traditions like ballroom. Once you went through that epiphany, did you begin to also see them in those terms?
Once I realized that this was an element that could be brought to the body, and that, you know, really sort of hiring the body as the vehicle to carry it, I started to think about ideas around masquerade, ritual and ceremonial dress, and started to do my research based around that. Looking at Haitian voodoo flags as a way of looking at ways to embellish and adorn the surface, the Mardi Gras Indian, the Gungun sort of costume, West African sort of ritual, and started to really look at that as a source of inspiration. And then also looking at urban contemporary sort of movement, dance, dress, and then couture. So it just really sort of provided me this broad range of areas in which I could sort of fold into ways of thinking and building the work.
Because the sonic component is important to you, do you find that you test materials to see if they're going to have interesting sounds?
Oh, yeah. You know, the thing about materials is that we may think we know what it sounds like, but then when you realize that to build a sound suit, it takes multiple millions of the same sort of component, that then the sounds eventually starts to become something other. So it's nice to be able to, it's interesting to hear it and not see it. And then when you actually see this sort of sound suit, you're like amazed, because it looks different than what it perhaps may sound.
Anybody in radio would recognize that. You know, in old-time radio, the sound effects were often made by objects completely disparate from the narrative they were supporting.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about Heard New York. How did the project come about?
You know, Heard New York came about with Creative Time contacting me and wanting me to do a project here. And then I think that they then partnered with MTA, which then provided this venue at Grand Central Station. And so then they contacted me again and said, you know, we would love to do it in Grand Central Station, which I thought was like phenomenal. So that's sort of how it sort of came about. But the actual project started from a residency that I had at North Texas State University. I was invited to do a massive project, and I had to come up with an idea. And so I came up with horses. You know, we don't tend to dream anymore. We're so consumed by just trying to hold on to our jobs and trying to get from point A to point B. And I wanted to sort of interface the public with a dream project, something that made you sort of come back to this imaginary place within your thoughts that I think is important and relevant to how we exist in the world.
Why do horses do that for you?
Because I started to do research and I started to look at puppetry and early puppetry where it takes two people to create this sort of animated horse was fascinating to me as a kid, and it's fascinating to me today that, you know, it's two figures and then there's a cloth that's thrown over the back and this, you know, horse sort of fabricated head, and yet there was a sense of realness. We were connected to something that we could identify, and that is so naive, and there's an innocence about that that is so extraordinary.
So these are going to be sculptures suggestive of horses?
Yeah, the project, you know, will be these horse costumes that will be mounted on saw horses. So they will be, it will set up and function as an installation. And then we have the great honor to be working with the Avonlea School.
So William, tell me, how is this going to work from your perspective? How are you thinking about the movement? How are you going to suggest horsemanship?
From my perspective, I research different mannerisms of horses. The competitive show horses, or the regal stallions, or the rebellious bucks. So we're going to be using movements and mannerisms from that, galloping, kicking, grazing, things of that nature. The suits are so majestic that even the simplest movements will create sound and effect.
Have you had a chance to work with your dancers yet?
Not yet. We see them tomorrow, and I'm so excited to be working with hopefully eager participants.
What kind of notes are you going to give them?
We like to work on the spot, and my only requirement is that they're quick studies.
We will sort of talk them through the actual sort of costume itself and talk about the practicalities around that.
Yes.
You know, we've created an outline, so we do have a clear sort of sense of what we're looking for. And then also we went to Vanderbilt Hall at Grand Central Station and really did a walkthrough last night of the space and getting a sense of that in relationship to the performance itself.
Talk a little bit about that. Grand Central is huge. How are you going to be using the space to get this idea of herd in New York?
It's huge, but there are 30 horses. And they are really massive in size. So they really absorb a lot of
space.
And demand a lot of space. So them sort of moving and galloping as a cluster amongst the people and through Vanderbilt Hall will be such a majestic and beautiful sort of sight. You know, my foundation is public space. So when I look out into that, I have to think in terms of scale. I have to think in terms of volume. That in order for it to really have a presence, it has to be large, big within its sort of scope and within its presence. So
are they life-size scale to horses, or are they bigger than that?
They're pretty much life-size scale. But then, you know, they're made out of synthetic raffia. So, again, as you're moving, the volume and the sort of expansion starts to move and flow. For the audience, you'll be having this up close and personal sort of encounter with the forms. And as they're moving, you will definitely hear it. It's such a subtle but wonderful sort of ruffling sort of sound. And then that's going to also be supported with the two harpists and then some percussionists, because it does then move into a dance performance piece.
Now, this is New York, world's busiest and most oblivious city sometimes. So how are you imagining your daily commuter with the briefcase and the iPad and is going to respond?
Well, you know, we came in January and did a test in Grand Central Station with six of the horses, and everyone stopped in their tracks. So what I hope that it does is that it does sort of stop you as you're transitioning from one point to another, and that moment becomes a moment of reflection.